Amen to that. You folks sang that like you believed it. I appreciate that. Appreciate everybody that's taking part in the service this morning. Tell the truth, Aaron, I believe you could just stay up here for a while and we'd do just fine. But so thankful for the contributions made by everybody this morning, including you as you're taking part in the service as well. But we're so thankful for the reading that Levi did. Appreciate so much the good prayer that Brother Kenneth led. And of course, Jason with the Lord's Supper and Aaron with the singing. So thankful for all the men at this church that are able to get involved and help out with those things. I'll tell you what, even Sean does a great job with the announcements. He does that so much better than I could, and I'm so appreciative of that as well. It just means so much to be a part of this group, and we are so grateful to be numbered among you. And looking forward to the next few minutes together, hopefully sharing some thoughts with you that will be of a help to you on your way toward heaven. In Joshua chapter 23, the great leader of Israel, the conqueror of Canaan, is nearing the end of his time on earth. His work has been completed. And he speaks to the people of his impending departure from this life. You see, at the age of 110, he knows that, to borrow words that Paul would write many hundreds of years later, he knows that the time of his departure is at hand. And it is with that in mind that he relates to the people what is about to become of him. And there in Joshua 23, and at the beginning of the 14th verse, Joshua says to the people, "Behold, I am going away of all the earth." I think I mentioned before how fond I am of differing ways that the Bible describes the end of life here, the departure from this life and this world. Just a few nights ago when we were at Panera Bread, we were reading in Acts chapter 7, and we read how that Stephen, when the Jews drug him out of the street and stoned him, fell asleep. About a year ago, I presented a lesson on the phrase that has to do with a person being gathered to his people. Now, that particular study, though it was based on a phrase that was used to describe someone's death, did not deal with the subject of death as much as it did with the subject of who your people are. Because at that time, that's the issue that ran through my mind when I read that passage and when I pondered. And that's what I do quite a bit when I stand before you and speak on the things that I speak on. I often am simply sharing with you things that have been on my mind or things that have come to my mind when I ponder a particular passage or event. And that's really the case with the subject for this morning. Some of you are aware that the family and I lost a very dear friend up in East Tennessee a few days ago. And I've been thinking about this, and I've been pondering certain passages of this nature, and I came across what Joshua says here to the people of Israel as the time of his departure approaches. And I think about it, and you know, this is not the only time that that phrase is used to describe the departure of someone. Many hundreds of years later, the great King David would use the same phrase as he spoke to his son Solomon shortly before his death, telling Solomon that I am going the way of all the earth. And in the case of this particular phrase, the thoughts that run through my mind as I ponder it do pertain more to the end of life itself and the end of our time in this world and this existence, the temporal nature of it all. Because the temporal nature, the temporary nature of this life is a fact of life for the world itself. I know there are a lot of people that wish they could live on in the flesh forever, but you know what? If you lived in the flesh forever, eventually you would have nowhere to live. Because this world in which our flesh lives, it's going to be gone one day. The very earth and the universe that we live in, they do not remain forever. I can hardly ever think about that concept of the earth being gone without thinking of a song that was really popular when I was a kid. Some of you will recognize it. It was by the group Kansas. It was called Dust in the Wind. And And near the culmination of that song, the climax of that song, the writer of the song declares, nothing lasts forever but the earth and sky. The writer's wrong. Carrie Livergren is wrong. Because the earth and the sky do not last forever. Peter in 2 Peter 3 describes in quite striking terms that the manner in which all that we now see as you look around you will one day come to an end. And of course, John in 1 John chapter 2 and verse 17 concurs with this idea as he notes there, the world is passing away. The end of this existence and the end of this life is a fact of life for all of us and even for the very world in which we live. And it is a fact of life for everything that pertains to life on earth, including our fleshly lives. And so I read these statements made by these great men of faith like Joshua and like David, and I am thus reminded, my mind is drawn to the fact that what happened to Joshua shortly after he uttered those words, and what happened to David shortly after he uttered those words, will eventually happen to me and to each one of you as well. And in describing their departures in this way, Joshua and David remind us of the commonality of this event among humanity. I am going the way of all the earth. I got curious as I pondered this over the last few days, and so I looked up just to see who the oldest living person is right now. Now, I realize these things can change pretty quickly, but as of yesterday afternoon, that was the last time I checked, it was Lucille Randon. She lives in France. She's 118 years old, born in the year 1904. The oldest living verified person on earth right now was born in 1904. Do you know what that means with regard to everybody born prior to 1904? Every last person that was ever born prior to 1904 has died. Well, that would be most people that have ever lived, right? It would. Even with 7 billion people in the world today, in the millennia that the earth has been around, there have been more than 7 billion people who have been born, lived their lives, and died. The majority of people who have ever lived have already died. My grandfather, born in 1903. And I was like a lot of little boys. Growing up, I idolized him. I thought he would be here forever. I thought he would always be here for me. And I couldn't imagine a world without him in it. That's one of the comments I remember making to Tanya when we realized his time was near an end, shortly after we married. As I grew up, I was sure at the very least he would live to be 100. He didn't. You know, you go back to that first genealogy recorded in Genesis chapter 5. Begins with Adam and I believe runs up to the time of Noah. Do you know what you read of every man that's listed there? Well, every man but one. Enoch's in that list as well. But you read that the man came into the world. He was born. He lived a certain number of years. He had children. And he died. That same sequence occurs 8 times in that chapter because it is so common. It is a common path of all of us. Given enough time and assuming the Lord tarries long enough, we all will go this same way. We all will die. I once read where someone made the observation. I don't know if it's accurate or not. I don't know how you would verify it, but it makes sense to me that it would be accurate. But the person said that among all the creatures that live on earth, man is the only one that is aware that he will not be here forever. That other species are unaware of this fact. I don't know if that's accurate or not. I don't know if my dogs know they'll be gone one day or not. But you know, that's really not important to me right now. That's not as important to our study as is the fact that we do know that. We are aware of that fact. The experience of mankind demonstrates it. And the Word of God declares it. In Ecclesiastes chapter 9 and verse 5, we are told that the living know that they will die. And of course, this is the physical death of man of which the wise man speaks. We know that that's going to happen. And those of us who trust the validity of the Bible know why it must happen. Paul told the Corinthians in 1 Corinthians 15, down around verse 21, that this circumstance really is the handiwork of man. Man's sin introduced death, spiritual and physical, into the world. Remember, following the sin in the garden, as God spoke to the man and the woman and the serpent regarding the consequences of what they had done, God declared to Adam in Genesis chapter 3 and verse 19 that because of what he would have done, he would return to the ground. For out of it you were taken. For dust you are, and to dust you shall return. Well, that's a condition that's true of every child of Adam as well. This is the death we inherit from Adam. Many believe that we're guilty of sin because we inherit Adam's sin. We talked about that last week. That's not correct. The Bible doesn't teach that. The Bible teaches just the opposite. We are not sinners because Adam sinned. We're sinners because we sin, each of us. We're mortal because Adam sinned. And because we are mortal, we do not remain in the flesh forever. We do not live forever. The writer of Hebrews in Hebrews chapter 9 and verse 27 tells us it is appointed unto man to die once. And after this, the judgment. One of the definitions that I found for that term that is translated appointed there in Hebrews has to do with something being reserved, as though you have a reservation or an appointment. And I do believe that it has been rightly noted that death is an appointment that we all have. And we might be able to postpone it, but we can't cancel it. We will eventually meet this appointment. At some point in time, our time in the flesh comes to an end. And when I think of death as being, when I think of death in terms of going the way of all the earth, I am reminded that eventually my time on earth will be up, as it has been for everyone who has come before me. It will be through. And that's really something that's pretty important to know. And I'll tell you what else is important to know in this regard, related to it. And that is that the time of departure for each of us and all of us really comes pretty quickly. Quickly than we realize so often. I suppose it's possible, but I really don't anticipate matching Joshua's longevity on this earth. I'm halfway to it. I just don't think I've got the rest of it in me. But Joshua lived to be 110. I don't anticipate matching Joshua. As we noticed at the beginning of the lesson, he lived a good long life. And it might be nice to make it that long. I don't know. It might be nice to make it that long, certainly to see the succeeding generations of my family that would come along in the meantime. I just don't think it's going to happen. Although I will say this, I do hope to attain to David's 70 years at least. But you know, in the 90th Psalm, in verse 10, the psalmist writes, "The days of our lives are 70 years, and if by reason of strength they are 80 years, yet their boast is only labor and sorrow. For it is soon cut off, and we fly away." Now, I will say this. Of the two numbers the psalmist lists there, I'm aspiring to the higher one. I will acknowledge that. But even at that, I'm well over halfway there. My father will be 91 soon. And he has mentioned to me numerous times that he considers himself to be living on God's time at this point, based on what the psalmist says here. And I think there's something to that. And I do think it is a blessing, both to my father and to those who love my father, that he has been able to attain the age that he has attained. A young lady I know once told me she didn't want to get old. And I asked her, have you thought about the alternative? Although, quite honestly, for the Christian, the alternative's not bad, is it? The alternative is pretty good. But at the same time, we should recognize that a good long life on this earth is a blessing. I truly believe that. For which we should be thankful. What a blessing it is to enjoy the privilege of growing old. I'm starting to see more gray hairs in my hair. I'm thankful that I'm living to see that. That's a good thing. But it does mean that we're closer to the end than we are the beginning. And we all get there far more quickly than we ever think we will when we're young. When I turned 50, I remember I thought about something that my father said when he and my mother celebrated their 50th anniversary. He said, wow, that 50 years went by fast. And it really does. And again, in all likelihood, I don't have another 50 in me. Time passes quickly for those of us who are fortunate enough to live through a significant portion of it. And we do approach the end of our time as it does so. But you know, this notion of our moving quickly toward the end and the end coming more quickly than we anticipate is not only applicable in the sense of years passing by so quickly, and they do pass by quickly, but there's another sense in which the time comes more quickly than we realize. There are many who have not seen many years yet and yet found themselves at the end more quickly than they or anyone who knew them thought they would. The regulars here have heard me talk about my sister-in-law, my brother's first wife. She gave birth to her second child and then died 8 days later. Sometimes the end comes quickly, more than we ever think it will. Not all life on earth attains to the years that we hope that it will, or anticipate that it will. In Luke chapter 12, Jesus tells the parable of the rich fool who seemed to be in the prime of life, making plans for a comfortable future, when in verse 20, Jesus says, then God said to him, fool, this night your soul will be required of you. Though I do not picture that man as being an old man, he was rapidly approaching the end, though, wasn't he? No matter how old he was, the end was coming quickly for him. It was coming that night. Clearly more soon, or sooner than he thought it would. Part of what we learn from the experience of all the earth is that life doesn't always extend to its full anticipated length as well. We got a lot of good Bible students here. And I know the words of James will sound familiar to you as James compares our life to a vapor that appears for a little time and then vanishes away. And when I think of passing from this life as going the way of all the earth, I am reminded not only of how common death is upon the earth, but also of how quickly it comes, really, to all men in the grand scheme of things. And that might get someone to thinking, as it does me, about what happens when we go, when we leave the flesh. Since death is common to all humanity, what happens at death is common as well. Now, biblically, when we talk about death in this sense, we're talking about the death of our flesh. What Paul described in 2 Corinthians 5 and verse 1 is our earthly house. Remember, we are spirit beings that live in a house of flesh for a time. And when James noted that faith without works is dead, he illustrated what he was talking about by talking about the death of the fleshly body. In James chapter 2 and verse 26, he noted that it is when the spirit is separated from the body that the body dies. And that is what is occurring when our bodies die. Our spirit, which really the real us, leaves the body that we live in until the time of resurrection. What becomes of the body in the meantime? Well, we've already noted the words of the Lord to Adam in Genesis 3, where he declared that eventually Adam's body would return to the dust. Well, that's a fact that's borne out elsewhere as well. the reading that Levi did for us this morning at the beginning of the service, Ecclesiastes chapter 12. And really, if you haven't recently, read through Ecclesiastes 12 sometime. It contains some of the most beautiful language in describing the changes that we go through as we approach the end. But then, at the conclusion of it all, the wise man does say in verse 7, "Then the dust will return to the earth as it was, and the spirit will return to God who gave it." The body returns to the earth, the spirit, us, we, enter God's care and control. Although I do not believe the spirit immediately goes to heaven, to the actual dwelling place of God. In this vein, I'm reminded of a couple of statements that Jesus himself made while here on this earth. One is near the beginning of his ministry, and then one is after his ministry had concluded. But the first statement is what he said to Nicodemus in John chapter 3 and verse 13, where the Lord noted that no one has ascended to heaven but he who came down from heaven. That is the Son of Man who is in heaven. I can say with a great deal of confidence that by the time Jesus came along, many people on earth had already lived, and many of them had already died. But despite the fact that we know several righteous people who had died by this time, the Bible describes them as such, apparently none of them had ascended into heaven, according to what Jesus says here. So what has happened to them? Well, I think we get a bit of insight to that, to the other statement Jesus made after his ministry was concluded. It's actually as he's hanging on the cross in Luke chapter 23, when the thief hanging to one side of him had a change of heart about Jesus and thus asked Jesus to remember him when he came into his kingdom. And Jesus' response is recorded in Luke 23 and 43 is, "So surely I say, today you will be with me in paradise." Both Jesus and that thief were going to be dead soon. They would be dead, both of them, by the end of the day. And Jesus tells that man that once they are, "You're going to be with me in a very special place." But it's not heaven. It's not the dwelling place of God that he mentions in the context. He mentions a place called paradise in the English. And it is a different term in the original language than that which is commonly used for heaven. And I don't claim to have just the real detailed understanding of all the language and everything implied in all this. But it does appear from these passages, as well as others, that there are places separate from heaven and hell where the spirits of those who have already departed go to await the final judgment, at which time we might say sentencing occurs. As I read through, for example, Matthew 25, or 1 Thessalonians 4, it seems that only at that time, when the Lord returns in judgment, that this will take place. But this too occurs to me as part of going the way of all the earth. Everyone that lives on the earth goes through these things that we're talking about right now, once their time is over and as they depart this life. At that time, their eternal fate is sealed, and there's no changing it once it has been determined. You see, that's another thing that is common to all who depart this life, that there's no returning for a second chance. We would do well to ponder this fact about what becomes of us when we die. We don't return. I think I've mentioned this to some of you before, but let's see, about 12 years ago, we went to China to get our daughter. And I remember when we left China to return home, as happy as I was to be back home, I had it in my mind at that time that, you know, I would really like to go back and visit China again someday. It was a fascinating place. The people were friendly. And even now, I still have that desire, although I don't know if it'll ever happen or not. But I'll tell you one return trip that I definitely will not be making. Once I have left this life and once I've gone to my eternal home, I will not be coming back here. Of course, for me, that's okay. Because considering where I plan to be at the time, I don't plan. I don't anticipate ever wanting to come back here. But you know what? There will be many people in the next life, I believe, and even are now, who wish they could come back and try again. But the scriptures indicate that is not an option. In Luke chapter 16, Jesus spoke of the rich man and Lazarus. Lazarus being a poor but apparently a righteous man who was a beggar, who when he died was carried away to Abraham's bosom, which I believe is a reference to that same paradise that Jesus spoke of. The rich man, however, when he died, found himself tormented. Now, according to the words of Jesus, if I understand correctly, this man wasn't interested in going back himself for another chance to get life right. He was wanting to just go back and warn his brothers so that they wouldn't come where he is. And if I'm not mistaken, he didn't even ask to come back himself to warn his brothers. He just asked Abraham, could you send Lazarus back to warn them? But the response from Father Abraham made it clear. There's no going back. Once you've departed this life, there's no return. That was a fact that David was aware of many, many years earlier. In 2 Samuel 12, remember, after God struck David and Bathsheba's child and caused it to die, when God initially struck the child and the child became ill, the text says David prayed fervently for that child. And he fasted, hoping that the Lord might change his mind. But then eventually, the child died. David stopped fasting. David took food and stopped praying about that particular crisis. And when he was asked about it later, in 2 Samuel chapter 12 and verse 22, 2 Samuel 12 and 22, the king said, "While the child was alive, I fasted and wept, for I said, who can tell whether the Lord will be gracious to me that the child may live? But now he is dead. Why should I fast? Can I bring him back again? I shall go to him, but he shall not return to me." It's a one-way trip when we leave this life. We go to our eternal dwelling place that we are choosing right now. And we do not return to this world at any point after that. Another fact about that death that is common to all the earth, one that we would all do well to remember, is that once we have gone, we will not be coming back. So we better make sure that the home that we're choosing right now is a home that we will be happy with. You see, that also reminds me, thinking about this notion of going the way of all earth, is that I do get to decide where I go next. The choice, paradise or torment, heaven or hell, is left up to us. We don't often think about it that way, but that really is the case. In Matthew chapter 7 and verse 21, Jesus said, "Not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of heaven, but he who does the will of my Father who is in heaven." And we usually, when we look at that verse, we consider the negative aspect of what it says. Just because you call him Lord doesn't mean you're going to heaven. But there's a positive aspect of that verse as well. And that is that if you do the will of the Father in heaven, you will go to the kingdom of heaven. Which leaves a very important question for each of us to ask ourselves. Is that what we're doing with our lives? Are we living according to the will of the Father who is in heaven? We must all leave this life and enter the next one at some time. We have no choice in that. But we have a choice with regard to how we leave it. Do we leave it in our sins and thus unfit for heaven? Or do we receive cleansing from the blood of Jesus Christ through obedience to the gospel and burial in the waters of baptism before we go? I mentioned this just the other night again, but remember that in addition to being a command, Mark chapter 16 and verse 16 is a promise as well. He who believes and is baptized, what did he say next? Will be saved. That a person gets to choose where they spend eternity is something also that is common to all mankind. What is not so common is making the right choice by virtue of obeying the gospel. We are eventually all going to go the way of all the earth. What will become of us then? Well, I hope you're giving that some thought, even as you live out this life. If you haven't already, I encourage you to start thinking about it now. And think about it as fervently and as quickly as you can. And take advantage of the opportunities that are placed before you to get yourself ready. Thank you for your attention this morning. Go ahead and get ready to sing the song that Aaron has selected for us. You know, we've got a good crowd this morning. I'm very thankful for that. The thought occurs to me that, you know, it may very well be that this same group of people may never get together again. It may be before the day's over, somebody in this assembly will be gone from among us. That's the way of all the earth, you know. And so we want to offer the invitation of Jesus Christ to any who might have need to render obedience to the gospel. Jesus came so that we wouldn't have to fear death. If you're living according to his will, he has promised you that he will take you home to heaven with him, and you can count on that. But if you fear death, is it because you don't trust God's promises, or is it because you know you haven't done all you need to do? If you know that you need to be baptized into Jesus Christ, we can accommodate you this morning. There's water right back here that we can immerse you in. If you're a child of God that's drifted away from him, and you know you're not ready for eternity, well, get right with him. Go to him and ask for forgiveness. And if you need the help of the church in this regard, we stand ready to assist you. There is no need for anybody in this room to leave here unprepared for eternity. So don't. Please let us help, even now, as we stand and sing together.
Then which was